Anti-Torah teaching. This Torah is Torah number 5, and we're having some connections problems. So it may show and it may not show. I done connected 4 or 5 times. So we'll see what we can do with it. If it keeps doing it, we're just going to go with it. For some reason, it's not staying connected. I'll show you what I can. If it keeps doing it, we're not going to take the time to pause. We're just going to keep going. But today's Torah is Torah number 5, Torah Porsha 5. And it's Kaye Sarah. And it just means the life of Sarah. The life of Sarah. And this Torah portion's it's all about Sarah and what we understand about her life, but it's finding out about her life in her death. So it's kind of a strange thing. And the Torah is going to be in Genesis 23, chapter 1 through Genesis 25, verse 18. And the half Torah is 1 Kings 1, 1 through 31. Very, very good half Torah in the parallels on how it parallels what's happening today. So try one more time. If it goes out, we're just going to keep rolling. Everybody has this down? Genesis 23, 1 through 25, 18, the half Torah, 1 Kings 1, 1 through 31. Abraham's negotiation to purchase the best burial place for his wife Sarah in the cave of Machpelah because of her greatness and righteous noble traits, and how we learn more about the life of Sarah and who she was from her death than any time earlier. And so we're going to learn a lot about her life in her death. Just by when she died, what were people doing? How were people reacting? It's very, very valuable. This Torah is so good. And Abraham points these things out for us through his willingness to buy the cave in Machpelah. We're going to see amazing parallels in Abraham's servant's mission as the first matchmaker to find and prepare a wife for Abraham's son Isaac, which takes us on a quest to answer the question, who is the bride of Messiah and what are her qualities? Who is the bride of Messiah and what are her qualities? Now, that's a very important statement, because we can claim to be a bride, but the qualities is what makes us the bride. So claiming something is one thing. We can all claim something, but the qualities is what make us. And so he's going to identify what those qualities are. Now, in order for you to become that bride, do you have to meet the qualities? If he sets the qualities, these are the qualities, this is what qualifies you to be the bride, and we don't meet those qualities, how can we say we're the bride? And we'll show you that, how that's being done throughout the world today. People claim to be the bride, but they haven't met the qualities. We're going to learn deeper symbolisms of Sarah as past Israel and Rivka as present Israel, and so much more. So there's a lot to go through, but we have tonight and tomorrow to do it. So we won't have to do a double. Topics in the Porsha. This week's Torah Porsha, Kaye Sarah, Life of Sarah, covers Matthew chapter 23. Sarah dies at 127. And Abraham desires to honor Sarah with the best burial place. He spared no expense. He went all out. And we're going to see that as we read through the chapter. In chapter 24, we're going to see Abraham sends his nameless servant, who had served him the longest to prepare a bride for the son. So we're going to see how that fits with us today. What's the practicality of that, how it fits our life today? And in chapter 25, Abraham takes another wife and has six more sons. Abraham blesses Isaac. And we'll cover that tomorrow morning, that part. We're going to do about half of chapter 24, going into part of that tonight, and then we'll finish it up tomorrow. We're going to see in the parties in the Peshat, the plain meaning, we're going to look at the life of Sarah revealed in her death. Remember, the life of Sarah is revealed in her death. The plain meaning, Sarah and Rivka were two righteous brides. So we have two righteous brides that we'll talk about and how they apply to our lives today. In the Remez, we're going to see God's character. We always look for God's character in the Remez, because every passage you ever read, when you read in the Torah portion, every passage always points out to one of God's characters. And God's character is a father who spares no expense for the bride. And Abraham was a type of Elohim, and he spared no expense for the bride, Sarah. And our father spares no expense for his bride. But his bride has to do what? Meet the qualities. There are certain qualities that he's looking for in his bride, and you have to meet that. Just like Rivka had to meet certain qualities. When the unnamed servant went to find Rivka, she had to meet some qualities. And if you notice what he said ahead of time before he got there, what was he expecting? He says, if she does this, this, and this, then I know she's the one. And then that just qualified that she was the one. Then she had to show her own character, what type of person she was. And we'll find that she was righteous just like Sarah was. The hidden glimpse of Messiah. Isaac's son received his righteous virgin bride prepared by a servant, the servant was acting as a symbol of the spirit, of the set-apart spirit. And that's why the set-apart spirit's been sent. It was sent on Mount Sinai when God gave the Torah. The Spirit of God was operating then, just like the Spirit of God operated at the very beginning. The Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and things started moving around and getting in position to be, so creation can be complete for humanity. And then we see the Spirit of God acting on Mount Sinai when Shavuot took place. And then we see the Spirit of God acting in Acts 2 when the day of Pentecost was fully come. The Spirit comes and he searches out. No one can go to the Father except the Spirit draw him. What is he looking for? Some qualities. Now, when he finds you, he finds us imperfect. He finds us, well, we have, so he first has to, by the Spirit of God, we have to accept Christ in order to start our qualification. Without accepting Christ, our sin is ever before us. We're stained. We've all sinned and come short of the glory of God. We don't meet the qualifications to be the bride. None of us. Not one person meets those qualifications, but Christ died for our sins. He died for our transgressions. And so we ask for forgiveness. We repent of those transgressions. And now we got to meet the qualifications. What do we do? How do we meet those qualifications? By obedience. We start obeying what the Torah says. We start obeying him, doing what he asks us to do. He said, how can we say we love him if we don't do what he says? So he's trying to tell us how to do it. He's trying to show us, and he said, I won't leave you without a comforter. I won't leave you comfortless. I'll send the set-apart spirit. And the set-apart spirit is just like the servant that went to find Rivka for Isaac. And that servant found us, and that we have to be obedient to the spirit in order to meet those qualifications. And we're going to learn all these things through reading this, how it applies to us today. The son, Isaac's son received his righteous virgin bride prepared by the servant, which is the set-apart spirit. And in the drash, we're going to see some anomalies. In this case, we have, in verse 2, we have a small cough, which in Paleo-Hebrew, the cough is like the open hand. And in the word for mourn, so we're going to see that when he mourned, what does that represent? We must live as true righteous brides like Sarah, which represented Israel, and Rivka, us descendants from the foreign land. That's that the two house. So we have Sarah represents Israel, and then we have Rivka who represents the lost tribes, the foreign land, those who are coming out, they're coming back to Israel. Very important that we see these symbolisms in the scripture. So when people ask us, why do you believe that? You can go to these verses and explain to them what it means, and we'll point that out as we read the text. In the Gematria, the Torah code for the small calf equals 20, and kaya to be. And then we'll look at, you're going to study the half Torah this week, 1 Kings 1, 1 through 31. It's speaking of David, because what's David is up in age, Abraham's up in age, and you see the symbolisms of their life and how, and David was old, he had circulation problems, he couldn't be warm, so they said we would get a virgin to come and lay next to him and help warm him. All of those are symbolism. We're seeing how God always supplies. He's constantly supplying for the men of God. So that was in the parties. So we'll start with chapter 23. If you have your Bibles, you can turn there. Genesis chapter 23. Sarah dies at age 127. And Abraham desires to honor Sarah with the best burial place. So we'll look at that together. So in Genesis 23, verse number 1, and Sarah lived 127 years. Now in the Hebrew, it says it this way, she lived 127. And then she died in Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan, and Abraham came to mourn for Sarah. That word mourn, you'd see it with a small cough, that's the anomaly that's in there, and to weep for her. Now, his mourning and his weeping, this small cough, is trying to make sure we understand that it's not normal mourning and weeping. It's not to make small of the matter, but it's the fact that everything she could have done in her life had been done. There was not another thing she could have done. And her departure was so amazing. It was like a face-to-face encounter. And the sages even use this. We say the kiss of death, but it has a negative connotation today. But then it was actually that Yah kissed Sarah and her spirit gave up and she went on. So understand that's why it points it out in the mourn that it was a different type of mourning. Even though he mourned for her, he knew there was not another thing she was, there was not one thing that she missed in her life that Yah didn't ask her to do that she didn't do. And so it explains in great detail when it says, and Sarah lived 127 years. So I have a slide to show you, but I broke it down. So at 100, she was like she was 20. And at 20, her innocence was as if she was 7 years old, with no sin, and she lived a righteous life. And so Sarah was a righteous woman. And so what we find is Abraham is going to make sure that he sets her up real nice as far as a burial place. And so he's got his eyes, he's been having his eyes on this spot. And I mentioned it in Lake Lahaina about Machpelah and the place that he had picked, because Adam and Eve are buried in that spot. Now, Machpelah is a cave, but it's a dual cave. It's not just one cave, it's two caves. They're one on top of each other. And so we know later on that they dug, there was more digging that made more caves in there, but it was the spot that he had been, he'd been looking at this spot for a long time, but it didn't belong to him. Even though God promised it to him, he didn't have access to it. And so we're going to see as we read through this how he went through a lot of negotiation to make sure that the title deed was final and he paid the amount of money that was asked, even though it was inflated by a lot. Big inflation. Not half, not even a third. It was huge inflation on what was asked, but he paid every bit of it because he didn't want it to be said that he negotiated and made him go down on a price. Whatever was asked, he put, no expense was spared because he was dealing with burial of a righteous woman. And Hebrews 11 says this about Sarah. By belief also, Sarah herself was enabled to conceive seed. Think about that. By belief also, Sarah herself was enabled to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the normal age, because she deemed him trustworthy who had promised. There was something going on with Sarah in her relationship to Yah. And she, although she went through all the battles and all the things that people said it won't happen, she bore the reproach of being childless all those years. She had to watch some other woman come and have a son by her husband. And so she bore that reproach and the discontent that that Hagar started to cause between Sarah and Abraham. She went through all of that until she hung in there with everything she could, and by belief, Sarah herself was enabled to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the normal age because she deemed him trustworthy who had promised. What a powerful verse. Very powerful. I remember when the Lord first revealed this to me years ago, and I preached, Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed. That's how it says it in the King James. And everywhere I went, I preached that message. I preached it every chance God gave me. I preached that message, not even realizing or knowing how important that was. But it was something about when I read it, because our focus is really on Abraham, 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 Abraham. But the sages point out that Sarah was the greater prophet, even greater than Abraham. So the Jews, the house of Judah that protected the Torah all these years, they knew something was up with Sarah. And they got it from Abraham, that Abraham would go through the lengths that he went through to make sure the spot that she would lay down on would be remembered forever and ever. It would be a place that, it's considered the second most holy place in all of that area. The second the most holy place would be the Temple Mount, but the second most holy place to all of Israel is Machpelah, where Sarah is buried, and it's recognized to this day. Kiryat Arba, Ribbi Yitzhak says, the city is called Kiryat Arba, the city of four. The city of four, because it is the city of the four couples buried there. Adam and Eve, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rivkah, and Jacob and Leah. Now, Rachel's not left out here, but she died on the way. And she's buried in Jerusalem, coming through Bethlehem. She's buried there because that's where she died. So she's buried there. But these are the cities, and it's called that to this day. So if you're wondering what Abraham, what inside information he had that I need to buy this spot. There's no other place I could bury Sarah. No other place. She has to be buried here. And he made sure to pay for that spot and that plot. It's just amazing the time that was spent and his concern that was going into. One of the things the sages says about the tent of Sarah is this. Three miraculous phenomena that occurred in the tent during Sarah's lifetime. Number one, the candle remained lit from one Shabbat to the next. In other words, on Friday evening, she would light the candle, and they wouldn't go out till the next Friday evening. And then she would light it again for the new Shabbat. But that was a miraculous thing that she was known for. That's how God was with her. Because she, you understand, her yielding to the Lord. Remember, Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed. Her yielding to the Lord was going to bring about this amazing prophecy that prophesied that she would have a son and all the house of Israel would come from that seed. And our own Messiah would come from that seed. How many understand how important it was that God protect her? And another thing, the second thing, the dough was blessed always and always sufficed for the family and their guests. So when Sarah would make the dough to get ready with the challah bread, when she would get ready, she would always take a portion of the challah bread and give it as a tithe to the Lord, always. And because of it, every time she made bread, it was always enough. And she'd make two loaves. And no matter how many people showed up, the loaves, it would just be enough. It was like the miracle when Yeshua prayed over the boy's meal. And they just kept giving it. They kept grabbing and giving. They would look and it'd be there. And they kept giving and giving. And at the end, they picked up 12 baskets. The same anointing was on Sarah when she made bread. Because there was always entertaining guests. Abraham never knew when somebody would stop by. She made the same. She always made the same. But when she made the dough, the blessings of the Lord was on it. And she just kept slight, no matter what it was, she always had enough. And she was known for that. And this is spoken at great length in the sages. Number three, a divine cloud was attached to the tent. So she had a divine cloud. How many remember when the cloud would come, when the children of Israel would camp and they'd set up the tabernacle, there'd be a pillar of cloud representing the glory of God. Well, Sarah had a cloud in her tent. And this tent is very important because once she dies, that tent stayed, it remained the same. There it is. And we'll find that Isaac, that's the tent that he went in to receive Rebekah. That's the tent that he went in. It's very important. And so we see these wonderful things that are pointed out in the life of Sarah. In Genesis 23, verse 3, then Abraham rose up from the bedside. And Abraham rose up from beside his dead and spoke to the son of Heth, saying, I am a foreigner and a sojourner among you. Give me property for a burial site among you so that I bury my dead from my presence. And the son of Heth answered Abraham, saying to him, hear us, my master. You are a prince of Elohim among us. This is the respect they have for Abraham. You are a prince among Elohim. They had so much respect for him. Bury your dead in the choicest of our burial sites. Wherever you want, you pick it. None of us will withhold from you his burial site from burying your dead. Now that's appealing. It's almost like a miracle. Here you are in need of a burial site, and they tell you, you're a prince of Elohim to us. Pick the choices of our burial sites, and none of us will withhold it to you. But remember, the key was, it's their burial sites. And what was Abraham after? his own burial site. That's what he was after. And so Abraham rose and bowed himself to the people of the land and the sons of Heth. And he spoke with them, saying, "If it is your desire that I bury my dead from my presence, hear me and approach Ephron, son of Zoar, for me. And let me have the cave of Machpelah, which he has." Now, he knew it belongs to somebody. It's a cave of Machpelah, and he has it. But he's asking them to go on his behalf and speak to him for him, which is at the end of his field. Let him give it to me for the complete amount of silver as property for a burial site among you. So what is he asking him to give it to him? Whatever the going rate is for burial property. That's what he's asking. Whatever it is, I'll pay it. And so I can't show you because we don't have it, but I have a map here showing you where it's located. Let me try it one more time. We spent a lot of time putting these things together, and when I get here, can't show you, but we tried to get AT&T over here, and I don't guess they're not functioning all cylinders right now. It won't connect at all right now. Anyway, so I wanted to show you how Machpelah's from Jerusalem. You come down just a little bit and you're in Mamre. We've been hearing about Mamre, and then we heard about Hebron and how he stayed in Hebron. And he's still there when Sarah dies. And then Machpelah is just, it's in Hebron, but it's just on the outskirts of Hebron. It's called Machpelah, and I had a map, and I had a picture of today. It was just taken not long ago of the site. There's been a whole building built over the caves, and people go travel from all over. If you're going to Israel, that's one of the sites you can go to. You can go to Machpelah and go to this site where the four couples are buried. In verse 10, "And Ephron dwelt among the sons of Heth, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the hearing of the sons of Heth, all who entered at the gate of his city, saying, 'Know, my master, listen to me. I shall give you the field and the cave that is in it.'" So he said, whatever burial price is, I'm fine with it. And he says, "I'm gonna let everybody hear me now." Now, they're in a court. So when you enter the gate, and the people of the city are there, it's a court set up. And whatever you said, people hear it and they witness it. It's an agreement. So he's making this agreement. He says, "Know, my master, based on the money he offered him, listen to me, I shall give you the field and the cave in it, and that is in it, and I shall give it to you in the presence of the sons of my people. I shall give it to you, bury your dead." So what is he offering? A gift. "I'm going to give it to you." Again, a miracle. It's great. Thank God for this miracle. But let's see what Abraham does. "And Abraham bowed himself down before the people of the land, and he spoke to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land, saying, 'If only you would hear me, I shall give the amount of silver for the field. Take it from me and let me bury my dead there.' And Ephron answered Abraham, saying to him, 'My master, listen to me. The land is worth 400 shekels of silver.'" Now that was a lie. That was a lie, because the land wasn't worth that. We could show you purchases of land throughout Scripture of that same amount that wasn't even close to 400 shekels of silver. "What is that between you and me? So bury your dead." He says, "It's worth 400 shekels, but I ain't worrying about it." But Abraham operated at a different level than this guy, this Hittite. And he wasn't going to fall for it. Because he knew if he fell for it, he would be in covenant with him. But if he bought it from him, it was a purchase. He was free and clear from any covenant of anything he was involved in. And you don't want to be in covenant on the wrong side. The moment you agree, you cut a covenant. You're in a covenant with them. And you don't want that. And Abraham listened to Ephron, and Abraham weighed out the silver for Ephron, which he had named in the hearing of the sons of Heth, 400 shekels of silver, currency of the merchants. Thus the field of Ephron, which was in Machpelah, which was before Mamre, the field and the cave which was in it, and all the trees that were in the field, which were within all the surrounding borders, were deeded. I mean, you know, that's what Abraham was after. He was after the deed. And he knew if somebody said, I'll give it to you, then later on they can say, can I always hold it over his head? Well, it's really mine, but I gave it to you. He said, I don't want to ever have that happen. He said, I wanted to know that you sold it, I bought it, and now it's mine free and clear. To Abraham, they were deeded to Abraham as a possession in the presence of the sons of Heth before all who went in at the gate of the city. And after this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field in Machpelah before Mamre, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. Thus the field and the cave that is in it were deeded to Abraham by the sons of Seth, of Heth, and the property for a burial site. Now let's go to chapter 24. This is where it gets interesting, this Torah. Really interesting. But notice we have a whole chapter dedicated to this negotiation for this land. But you remember, God promised him all this land, but he didn't have anything that he can call, we own this. Now this is the first purchase of land that he owns. Now it was promised to him by Yah. But so he could sit around and say, well, I ain't doing anything. Yah promised it to me. How many know you take that approach, you get nothing. He's putting some action to his belief. He said, if it's promised to me, I better start owning it. So he makes this first purchase. And he made sure that he paid for it, and he paid a real hefty price, 400 shekels. Abraham sends his nameless servant, who had served him the longest, to prepare a bride for the son. In Genesis 24, verse 1, and Abraham was old, advanced in years, and Yah had blessed Abram in every way. And Abraham said to the oldest servant of his house, who ruled over all he had, please put your hand under my thigh. Now this was a common a way of an agreement back then. The reason you put it under your thigh, because it gets close to a man's reproductive. That's why it says, if you're reading that in the Bible, that's he's put his hand under his thigh, because he wants you to know that if you don't do what I'm asking you to do, it's going to affect the seed. That's why that was said. It'll affect the seed. The promise is going to be affected. So I want you to put your hand under my thigh so that I make you swear by Yah. Now he's got his hand under his thigh and he says, swear by Yah that the Elohim of the heavens and the Elohim of the earth, that you do not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. He's got a task. He's got a job to do. What is he looking for? This servant's looking for the perfect bride for Isaac. How can I get Isaac this perfect bride? He said, well, you promised me, and you swear to Yah that you're going to do what is required, that you won't take a daughter from the Canaanites. But to go to my land and to my relatives and to take a wife for my son, Isaac. And the servant said to him, What if the woman refuses to follow me to this land? I mean, you know, there's a great consequence when a woman refuses to follow. And the church is always described as a bride, as a woman. There's a great consequence if the church don't refuse to follow the set-apart spirit. When you don't want to follow the set-apart spirit, there's a great consequence. Do I then take your son back to the land from which you came? And Abraham said to him, beware lest you take my son back there. He's giving him some great details and tell him some things, this is what you can do and this is what you cannot do. You don't bring my son back there. How many know going back is not going to help the son? The son's going to stay put because the son is now dwelling in the land that's been purchased. His mother's buried there, and now the hand of God is starting to move on their behalf to give them this entire land. So we don't want to go back. We want to stay put. And Yah Elohim of heavens, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my relatives, and who spoke to me and swore to me, saying, to your seed I give this land. He sends his messenger before you, and you shall take a wife for my son there. So think about it. So if the messenger, the servant that he sends out, and practical as we look at it today, if that servant is representative of the set-apart spirit who's looking for his bride, he's finding the bride, and he's got certain qualities the bride has to have. So I want you to keep that in mind as we're going through this, because it's going to help you understand this reading in the Torah. It'll help you understand the 24th chapter. And if the woman refuses to follow you, then you shall be released from this oath. Only do not take my son back there. Don't go back there. Then the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. And the servant took 10 of his master's camel and left, for all his master's goods, gifts, were in his hand. And he rose and went to Aram Naharaim, to the city of Nahor. Now, I want you to understand, when he goes out to look for this bride, he takes all his master's possessions. 10 camels loaded down with gold, silver, gifts, you name it, he had it with him. And he's going, and all of that is for the purchase of the bride. And I want you to know, when God sent out his servant, the set-apart spirit, he gave him everything. He had everything that Yah could give. Yah couldn't, when he gave his only begotten son, he couldn't give him no more, because it was like him giving himself. And he gave everything to find the bride. So this going to church or being a Christian, this is not a joke. If you think, well, I feel like I'm going to be a little more religious, this is no joke. This is not about religion. This is about whether or not you're really meeting the bride qualities and you're going to be selected. Because at the end, if you don't meet those qualifications, then you're not selected. And this has to be more than just identifying with your faith as a religion or a certain church, or I'm this or I'm that. We put titles on what we want to be. This is the life change. This is us preparing. This is us keeping ourselves. We're talking about a pure maiden, a pure virgin. And we're going to see how he gives a description of Rivka. Gives a clear description so nobody makes a mistake and thinks, well, she was a young maiden, but she wasn't a virgin. It doesn't say that. He makes sure to qualify everything he says about her. And so we have to be qualified. Because we know Revelation speaks about two women. It said one woman, her head is surrounded by 12 stars, which represent the 12 tribes of Israel. And she keeps herself, but it speaks of another woman who's riding a beast. It has a religious system and is drunk with the wine of the saints. And it claims to be the bride and don't meet the qualifications. So it's a religious system. It's not good versus evil, or, you know, the devil versus an angel. It's none of that. We're talking about it's another woman, beautiful woman, but she's riding the beast and she's drunk with the blood of the saints. And he's telling us, he said, that woman claims to be the bride, but the claim is false. There's some certain qualities that have to be met in order to be the bride. And we'll look at some of those qualities tomorrow. The servant then took 10 of his master's camels and left, and all his master's goods, gifts were in his hand, and he rose and went to Aram Naharaim, to the city of Nahor. And he made his camels kneel down outside the city by a fountain of water at evening time, and the time when women go out to draw water. And he said, Yah, Elohim of my master Abraham, please cause her to meet before, please cause her to meet before me this day and show loving commitment to my master Abraham. So he's praying about his task, the journey that he has. And he made an oath. It was a serious oath. See, I am standing here by the fountain of water, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Now let it be that the young woman to whom I say, please let down your jar to let me drink, and she says, drink and let me water your camel too, let her be the one whom you have appointed for your servant Itzhak. And let it be known by this that you have shown loving commitment to my master. So notice what he puts out. It's like a fleece before the Lord. He said, the woman that I talked to and I asked for a drink, and she lets her jar down to her hand so he can drink. And then she immediately says, I'll water your camel, which is a great task. Watering the camel is not like watering the sheep. You can water the sheep. You can pour some water in a bowl, and the sheep will go there and they'll drink for a bit, and they'll give up. But camel, they drink a lot. And she's going to water 10 of them. So this is a major task. This is a lot of work has to be done. So it's not some easy task, this fleece. He says, that's the kind of person she'll be. I want to see one of her qualities come out in her. Well, let's see. And it came to be, before he had ended speaking, that see, Ribka, who was born to Bethuel, the son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother, came out with her jar on her shoulder. So she's carrying her jar on her shoulder. And the young woman was very good, looking, a maiden, no man having known her. Notice the detail. She wasn't just a good looking woman. She wasn't just a maiden, but no man had known her. So he's given very clear description of Ribka. And she went down to the fountain, filled her jar, and came up. And the servant ran to meet her and said, please let me drink a little water from your jar. Now I want you to understand, here's this stranger. This stranger's got 10 camels, they all kneeling down, and he's waiting for someone to come. And Ribka's there, she gets her jar, fills it up with water, and now she's returning back home. She's going to do her task. She's getting the water and going back. And he runs to her and says, can I have a drink of water? And she said, drink my master. He's already moved by her language. Drink my master. And she hurried and let her jar down to her hand. She did what? She hurried. She was very on point of everything. Who else hurried when he looked up and seen three men? And he was in a condition that he shouldn't have been hurrying. So he's already seeing some qualities in her. He's looking for these qualities. He's looking for qualities in us. What's our attitude when we're asked to do something? What is our heart attitude? So you can force yourself to do it, but have a bad attitude, and you get nothing out of it. But if your heart attitude's right, that's what he's looking for. He's looking for qualities in us. And so I was meditating on this today. You know, especially when you're moving from where we were and going into the Hebrew roots and going back to the wonderful things of the Torah, and you start doing things of symbolism and keeping Torah and keeping the feast days. We can do all those things, but that don't meet qualities. There is one quality in doing those things if you keep Shabbat. He considers Shabbat a quality. That's one of the things he considers a. He uses the word Shabbats in the plural because he said you got to keep all my Shabbats. He said there's high holy days that have to be kept that are during feast days, that he's as a requirement. So he does consider that, but then you know we do other things. But he don't count those as qualities. What he counts is our heart attitude when we're doing them. That's very important to him. And so he's seeing these qualities in her. She let her jaw down to her hand and gave him the drink. And when she had finished giving him a drink, she said, "Let me draw water for your camels too." Now, I'm sure she's not a dumb girl. She knows he's got 10 camels. So she knows what she's signing up for. But he's seeing her energy and her willingness to live out Torah. He's seeing her willingness. She's got these characteristics that Abraham had and that Sarah had. And so he's out, you know, when you're trying to replace a great matriarch like Sarah, you're not just going to pick anybody. Now, when he left, Sarah was dead. And we got to find Isaac a bride, and it can't just be anybody. So he's looking for these qualities. Remember, he fleeced before the Lord, and what's happening? Exactly what he said. She said, "Until they have finished drinking." I'm not going to stop until they have the 10 camels are finished. Now, how many know that camels drink a lot of water? Not a gallon, not 2 gallons. They drink 20, 30 gallons in one setting. Well, she's got a jar. A jar is about 2 gallons. She's carrying it where? On her shoulder. About a 2-gallon jar. Now, how long that's going to take to water 10 camels? Take a while. And she's doing it with haste, no complaining. And this is a stranger. Great qualities that he's seeing in her. Till they have finished drinking. And she hurried and emptied her jar into the trough and ran back to the fountain to draw water, and she drew for all his camels. And she wasn't just doing like that. Listen, when you have somebody who says, I wanna go to work, and you say, okay. And they show up and they get out the car and they kind of doing like that. You go, what in the world? It just never works. You got to have enthusiasm. You're the new guy. You just come to the job. You got to be, you know, move a little bit. But don't get out and lean on a car like that. And yeah, we're going to start work in 5 minutes. She hurried and emptied her jar. She was moving. And we see these qualities. Again, he's looking for this. It's really helping this servant because he's under it. I mean, I gotta find Isaac a bride. Now, listen, who would want that job? Go find somebody a bride. And you know, people still practice that today. In Nepal, they practice that. So they always ask, "Did you marry for love?" And the reason they ask that, because according to the Word of God, that's absolute crazy, that question. People think love has to exist at the beginning. When you serve Yah, both of you, love is introduced to you, and it's the real deal. And so we see them, they ask that in Nepal. Did y'all get married for love? I asked them, what are you talking about? They said, well, they had arranged marriage. Just, they went to another city in India and found this family, and they had a daughter, and they made a swap with whatever they do and to bring them. And it's an arranged marriage. Family shows up. She gets out, and there's your wife. This is what's about to happen for Isaac. He's back at home with Abraham, and his servant's under it. And he's going to find somebody that's special. And watching her, the man remained silent in order to know whether Yah had prospered his way or not. Like, look what he did. He said, I'm on to something here. I'm not going to talk. Because this is where we get in trouble a lot of times. We're on to something and we talk too much. Let God do his thing. And that's what he's doing here. He's doing what he'd asked him to do. So he didn't speak. And it came to be, when the camels had finished drinking, that the man took a golden nose ring weighing a half a shekel and two braces and her wrist weighing 10 shekels of gold and said, whose daughter are you? He's really interested. Now he's got a nose ring and two braces. How many know what that's for? He's about to claim the property. He don't want nobody to show up and claim it with him. He's about to make sure that he's putting a mark on her. So he says, whose daughter are you? Please inform me, is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night? And again, I got a nose ring here. I'm looking at it, but you can't see it, but I can show you. It sort of looks like this. So he gives her the nose ring. She puts it on. And now she is marked as a property that's going to be designated for marriage. Two bracelets. And now nobody can come in there and say, I claim her. He made sure right up. He said he got it in his hand. He's ready. He was prepared the moment he finds out. So, and she said to him, I am the daughter of Bethuel, Milcah's son, whom she bore to Nahor. And she said to him, we have both straw and fodder enough and room to spend the night. Now, I don't know about you, but he didn't know who she was. He just said to the Lord, this is the fleece, and he was trusting God. Then he asks, who are you? And he finds out that she's Abraham's descendant. And the man bowed his head and worshiped Yah. He was so moved by it. He bowed his head and worshiped Yah. And he said, blessed be Yah Elohim of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his loving commitment and his truth toward my master. As for me, being on my way, Yah led me to the house of my master's brother. Then the young woman ran and informed those of her mother's house these matters. And Rivkah had a brother whose name was Laban. And Laban ran out to the man to the fountain. So a brother steps up and says, I got to see what this is all about. And it came to be when he saw the nose ring and the bracelets on his sister's wrist, when he heard the words of his sister Rivkah saying, thus the man spoke to me, and he went to the man and saw him standing by the camels at the fountain. You know, Laban gonna go see what's going on here. Who put a nose ring on my sister and bracelets on her arm? Who is this guy? And he said, come in, thou blessed of Yah. Why do you stand outside? So the servants under the shelter, I myself have prepared the house and a place for the camels. So the man came into the house while he unloaded the camels and provided straw and fodder for the camels and water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. Now, why was Laban impressed? The size of the nose ring was not small, of gold and two gold bracelets. Now, this family might never saw gold like that in their entire life. But we're talking about Abraham and the blessings on Abraham, and he took 10 camels to carry the gifts that he was bringing to find this bride. And once he saw the nose ring and the bracelets, he was so impressed, he ran out to find out what else does he have, and he realized this guy's got more stuff than we've seen in our lifetime. And they set food before him to eat, but he said, let me not eat until I have spoken my words. And he said, speak on. And he said, I am Abraham's servant, and Yah has blessed my master exceedingly, and he has become great, and he has given him flocks and herds and silver and gold and male and female servants and camels and donkeys. And Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master when she was old, and he has given to him all that he has. And my master made me swear, saying, do not take a wife for my son from the daughters of Canaanites, in whose land I dwell. But go to my father's house and to my relatives and take a wife for my son. And I said to my master, what if the woman does not follow me? But he said to me, Yah, before whom I walk, sends his messenger with you and shall prosper your ways, and you shall take a wife for my son from my relatives and from my father's house. Then when you go to my relative, you are to be released from this oath, and if they do not give her to you, then you are released from my oath. And this day I came to the fountain and said, Yah Elohim of my master Abraham, please, if you are prospering the way in which I am going, see, I am standing by the fountain of water, and when the young woman comes out to draw water, and I say to her, please give me a little water from your jar to drink, and she says to me, drink, and let me draw for your camels too, let her be the woman whom Yah has appointed for my master's son. And I had not yet ended speaking in my heart. Then see, Ribka was coming out with her jaw on her shoulder, and she went down to the fountain and drew water. And I said to her, please let me drink. And she hurried and let her jaw down from her shoulders and said, drink and let me water your camels too. So I drank, and she watered the camels too. And I asked her and said, whose daughter are you? And she said, the daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore to him. Then I put the nose ring on her nose and braces on her wrists. And I bow my head and worship Yah and bless Yah Elohim of my master Abraham, who had led me in the true way to take the daughter of my master's brother for his son. And now if you are going to show loving commitment and truth to my master, let me know, and if not, let me know, so that I turn to the right or to the left. And Laban answered Bethuel too and said, the matter comes from Yah. We are not able to speak to you either evil or good. And so that's the spot I'm going to stop, because I want to talk about who is the bride. In the morning, we're going to talk about the qualities of the bride. Now, I want you to understand, this servant, he had a great task to do. He had to find somebody that was suitable for Isaac. not just because he was Isaac. He was the son of Abraham and Sarah. And the prophetic word that was over his life, that his seed would carry on. He had to find somebody suitable to meet that prophetic word so it wouldn't diminish that prophecy that went forth for him. So this was a task that he didn't take lightly. He meant what he did when he put his hand under his thigh and he made the oath. He meant it. And he prayed to Yah, and Yah was with him, and Yah led him. And they said, and they qualified, we can't tell you anything. We can't tell you nothing evil and nothing good. He said, we know this is from Yah, and they weren't going to question it. And so we're going to go into these qualities in the morning. Who is the bride? And we're going to find out, do we meet the qualities? Do we have those qualifications that make us the bride? Or have we settled on, well, you know, I go to church every now and then, I try to live right. How many know trying to live right is not a quality that he's looking for in the bride? You know, I try to do the feast days. You know, I wear the tzitzits. What does that mean? It means nothing at all if we don't have the right heart attitude. Notice that. He wasn't concerned what she was wearing. All he knew that she was a young maiden and she had not known a man. And she come out, but he was interested in how she carried herself, her heart attitude. Those were very important to him. The same thing with us. What's our heart attitude and how do we carry ourselves? Do we carry ourselves that matches what the Torah says we should do? The way we respond to situations, is it what Yah likes or is it what he dislikes? She was showing the qualities that Abraham showed. When Abraham saw the visitors, he got up in a hurry and he said, we want to fix something for you. And he called her Sarah. And what did she complain and say, I don't want to do it? You always out entertaining the guests and I'm in here having to fix it? She didn't say that. What did Sarah? She went ahead and done what he asked. Because he knew whatever he was doing, whatever she was doing, you add them together and it brings about the purpose, the full purpose of Yah. That's what brings about the kingdom. So these are lessons we can learn in our own relationships. We learn these lessons. It's not tit for tat. It's not you do it today, I'll do it tomorrow. This is not that. It's everybody understanding their position and living to the fullness of their position. And when two people are doing that, at the end of the day, you can draw a line under it and say, we've done what God asked us to do. We please Yah. That's the qualities he's looking for. And so we're going to look at these qualities and we're going to dissect them a little bit at a time. And we'll read verses for each one of them. And I believe this will minister to our hearts in the morning. We'll cover this. So Shabbat Shalom tonight. We thank you. We'll see you in the morning for our morning service. And we just thank God for you. Does anybody need prayer for anything?